Madden Monday on a Tuesday this week. Tim Benz and Mark Madden, because of the Memorial Day holiday, we're coming to you a day later than normal. Mark back from Conneaut Lake, and I'm back from my brewery tour through Michigan. Most importantly, we both got a chance to see the finale of Succession, which is way more important than anything we're going to talk about sports-wise today. So, Mark, let's start here. How did you think the series wrapped up on Sunday?
Well, by far more important than anything else we'll discuss. I thought it was a great series finale to a great series. One of my top, I mean, I haven't made a list, but probably one of my top five TV shows of all time. I thought the ending was perfect. I predicted two possible endings. Kendall wins and turns into his dad, or Tom wins. And Tom won. And at the end, he kind of held his hand out, and Shiv touched it almost like she was kissing the ring. I thought it was magnificent. Greg is going to be downgraded, but still survived. I thought Jeremy Strong's acting as Kendall is the acting by him was as good as any acting I've seen in any venue ever, be it movie, TV series, HBO, you name it. He topped it, or at least equaled it. I loved the grand finale.
I found myself strangely, Mark, and I didn't realize this about myself watching it until it was playing out in the finale, but as it became clear what was going to happen in the last 10 minutes or so, I almost found myself a touch disappointed in the sense that I wanted one of the three of them to win, and I didn't care who. I kind of wanted to see one of the three of them win and just see how the other two handled the loss. But the way
not
it ended...
Not me. I was Team Tom all the way. Tom and Greg.
Well, at least we can maybe now have a Disgusting Brothers sequel. That's what I'm rooting for at this point.
Well, I like that Greg ratted on Tom. You know, went to Kendall with what was going on to give Kendall a chance to do an end-around with Shiv and almost salvage the situation. But Tom kept Greg around to be his dog's body, to be his, you know, gopher. He's back to being plain old Greg again. No more Gregettes. The original item is back where he started. So, again, just nothing wrong for me with the way it turned out. And I thought the ebb and flow of the final episode was tremendous. I liked Kendall on the park bench at the end. You wonder what's going to happen to him. Just unbelievable.
I thought the way they set up the eventual betrayal by Shiv at the very end through the betrayal of Tom and Mattson and bringing the kids together at the mom's house of all places in harmony and sort of regressing to the days of their youth. Like, to use that to set up the terror down at the end was magnificent. There was a minute there I'm like, they're not really going to, like, bring the kids together and give this a happy ending, are there?
There was a minute there where the kids were happy.
Yeah.
A couple, actually, at night and on the beach at their mother's place, and they were happy when they were watching the video of, what was it, his dad, their dad celebrating his birthday, something like that. His dad, like, they were singing Irish songs and whatnot. And the dad seemed happy, so they were happy. And I thought that one thing the series got across perfectly was, never mind the kids, Logan Roy, played so well by Brian Cox, was incapable of happiness no matter how much he got.
They also did a nice job of sort of undercutting Connor's hopes and dreams subtly. They kind of left him out hanging in the lurch by the end. But at the same time, when they're giving away all the stuff at the apartment and then left it dangling that Wisconsin might turn and Mencken may not become the president, the look on his face, look on her face, that she was going to have to stick around with him the whole time, that was pretty well done too.
Oh yeah, Willow was waiting to get Connor to Sylvania, that's for sure. but then again, I don't think Connor ever expected equal to what the other three kids got.
Yeah, he seemed resigned to his lot, so to speak.
Yeah, and you know, he married the hooker and had money. I mean, how much better was it going to get for him?
So, sequel or not, Mark, what do you think?
Okay, from whose perspective would you do the sequel?
Probably, well, I was thinking it'd be Tom and Greg, because I kind of thought they'd lose, and I thought that would make the most sense. But maybe Roman's now, because it looks like Roman's going to go in a totally different direction. Shiv seems stuck in it.
Here's the thing, though. Have you ever read many profiles and interviews with Jeremy Strong?
I know he's a wackadoo method actor.
Right, the guy who plays Kendall. It doesn't strike me he would want to do this. And without Kendall in it, either as the main protagonist or at least, you know, making an appearance, I don't think it works. And I also think Kendall is the one you're wondering about most at the end. What happens to him? So I think he would have to be the main focus of any sequel or movie.
How about the Penguin succession, Mark? Where's that going? Is it going to be Dubas?
Well, I mean, I've been told he just, you know, was taking the weekend to decide. I'm assuming it's him. I'm hearing it's him with Edzo as team president. But, you know, we'll see what happens when it actually gets announced. If it gets announced, what direction they go in if that doesn't turn out to be what happens.
If you're Dubas, what would you do? Wait a year on Ottawa or take the Penguins job?
Well, there's no guarantee he gets Ottawa. It's likely, but no guarantee. And sometimes when you wait for something, it's not there. You look stupid. You know, maybe you're fouled a little bit moving forward. And if I were Dubas, I would say, okay, FSG wants a guy like me, because that's the kind of administrator they pursued with their other sports teams too. Just this clinical methodologist. So I think he would see the good fit, even if the Penguins aren't in a great situation. Like, I've been saying, you know, when we talk about Dubas coming in, Dubas will have to spend the first year undoing Hextall's damage. Case in point, he might have to trade Granlund and a third-round pick for nothing just to get rid of Granlund. You know, those are the kind of moves he's going to have to make. I would say Granlund and a second-round pick, except Hextall traded that for Granlund. And people are going to say he'll be criticized right away because, oh, doesn't he know that Sid and Gino and Letang only have so many years left? Well, of course he knows that. But other teams aren't going to say, hey, we know you guys are on a timetable because of Sid, Gino, and Letang. We'll take Granlund for nothing.
Is that why they're trying to grease the wheels and get Dubas to meet Sid and get them cozy in the first place?
Well, I was told that was coincidence, and I was told by somebody who I believe that to have got it right. So Sid works out at night up at Cranberry, and I was told Dubas was there meeting with Penguin Scots when Sid kind of walked in. I know Sid made it known to people that he didn't want to be seen as having interviewed Dubas for the position, which is kind of what it looked like, right?
Yeah.
Then again, Edzo has denied being in Pittsburgh last week, and, you know, I'm pretty sure he was. Somebody I know says he saw him, so who knows?
What kind of role would that be for Edzo, do you think, aside from ceremonial?
Ceremonial.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
I have been told, Tim, that Dubas has been promised autonomy for personnel and a direct line of communication with FSG.
Okay, and Edzo is there, what, just to be a sounding board, a second opinion in the room with a big voice, that sort of thing?
I could have sworn we just agreed on ceremonial.
Is that how you define ceremonial?
Yeah, I mean, give or take. The one thing about Dubas I don't know that has to happen, will he go to Sullivan and say, listen, you have to temper your coaching to the type of player we're able to assemble? And I, if I were Dubas, I would want that said by Sullivan before I took the job.
Maybe is that where Edzo comes into play, to be a buffer in that regard? Is that where ceremonial can actually become practical?
Mike Sullivan ain't won a playoff series since 2018. He don't deserve no buffer.
It just seems like FSG thinks differently because they're real high on Sullivan.
Yeah, but when I heard Dubas has autonomy and direct line of communication to FSG, that tilted the balance of power some.
Mark, at the time we're speaking, the West Final is at 3-0 Golden Knights over the Stars in the second. If they hang on and win, how do you see that final playing out against the Florida Panthers?
Well, Florida will have gone 10 days between playing a game, right?
That's too long.
Well, I mean, but you can't help it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's too long from their standpoint. I think it really...
Well, no, here's how that generally works. It will hurt them the first game. Because Vegas will come in, they'll be, you know, in a groove, they won't be at all rusty, whereas Florida will be. After the first game, the advantage from, you know, the break reverts back to Florida.
You think Florida wins it? Because I do. I like Florida against whoever comes out of the West.
I don't know. I think it'll be really boring because the playoffs have been terrible. I mean, just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most unentertaining playoff I remember in hockey for, well, I don't know how far back you could go. Who would I pick in a Vegas-Florida final? I would pick Vegas just because, well, no, hold it. Well, Tim, I'm going to reserve the right to wait till we know who it is, simply because I think Vegas has the better team, but Florida has the best player in Tkachuk and the best goalie in Bob.
Mark Madden with us. This is a Madden Monday podcast. Mark, do you think that whoever stole Kenny Pickett's card decided to just give it up when he saw the playbook in it and thought, ah, who needs this garbage?
Well, we'll know if anybody saw it if they start running, you know, third down passes short of the sticks. You know, I don't blame Pickett for that. That's just, you know, some bum luck. And, you know, the thief, you know, left the car, you know, he drove up in there.
Yeah, what a mastermind, huh?
Traced. It was like a, it was like he thought he was doing the trading because it was what, the Bowser, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't, you know, I think it's funny. It's like, dude, where's my playbook? But I don't think it's that big a deal. It's just funny, really funny.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what else are you supposed to do? I think, hadn't he left practice to go to a radio hit? And then, you know, where else is the playbook going to be but in his car at that point?
Yeah, I would have had it on my person, to be honest. But then again, no, I know I wouldn't, because I don't think the playbook is like a nuclear secret. I just don't, like, whenever I hear it said that the reporters could go to OTAs and they can't report what they see, but they can ask the players what happened and then report what the players say. And at some junctures, they can take photos and post them on Twitter. It is like the clumsiest censorship I've ever heard of. The whole thing's dumb, and a playbook getting stolen is within the spirit of the thing.
How about the big picture of what goes beyond the playbook? Because as I'm writing for the Trib for Tuesday, we've spent a lot of time this offseason buttering up the Steelers over some nice moves they've made in the offseason, adding to depth, bolstering the offensive line, maybe making the defense a bit more versatile, especially up front. But all that pales in comparison to what the playbook can be broadened out to be and how Kenny Pickett runs it. Everything else is a side dish.
Yeah, but we're kind of leaning toward blaming Canada already when we say that. I think it's how much Pickett improves, period. No matter how much you want to blame the play calling last year, Pickett could have done much better within the context of what was called.
Well, even he said that in his first interviews at OTAs. You know, I believe the exact quote was, at some point it has to be players, not plays. Well, that some point is now.
Yeah, no question. I think the season depends on him. I think they have kind of a 9-man roster, and how much better they get is how much better he gets.
You're buying all the hype from Baltimore about how great and happy everybody is with the new offense and Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, why not? I mean, they're happy until they're unhappy. That's generally how it works, right?
Yes, very much so, yes. I'm also interested to see what happens with Hopkins, to see if this reunion with him and the Browns is going to happen and Deshaun Watson in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny that the Steelers play all bad quarterbacks except in their division. I mean, a couple others, like Trevor Lawrence, whatever. But yeah, I hate the football offseason right now. We talk about the same crap over and over again. There's nothing that happens at OTAs that matters for any team.
Finally, Mark, the Pirates lost again. They were blown out by the Giants. They've lost 7 of 10. They've lost 3 in a row, and they're below 500. Will they ever get above 500 again, do you think?
I predicted if they go 3 games below 500, they will never get above 500 again this year. Tim, DVE every year does the Memorial Day 500, right? The 500 greatest songs of all time?
Yes.
The Pirates did the Memorial Day under 500. Because that's when it hit the mark. And today's loss, 14-4, you know, having a position player pitch to end the game. I hate that, by the way. I don't think any team should ever use a position player to pitch. It delegitimizes the game and makes it look like a circus.
So that succession is over. What do you watch? Do you have something next up in the queue?
Yeah, you know what I watched the first episode of yesterday? I was on vacation. I was at my friend's house, who has a house on the lake at Conneaut. And he showed me the first episode of Ted Lasso, which I've been putting off watching for no logical reason. I got to watch it. I mean, the first episode was just unbelievable.
First season's okay. I think you're going to grow tired of it, especially by season 3, and season 3 leads into getting really preachy. I've heard it compared to the last season of MASH.
Well, maybe I won't watch any more then. Well, MASH was a gradual, and I, to honest say, decline in that regard. MASH started out as a comedy that dabbled in drama, and as Alan Alda got more creative input, it became a drama that dabbled in comedy, and not even that much in comedy.
Yeah, that's the exact analogy I've seen written a number of times about where Ted Lasso is going. See, I'm a little surprised that you're in on Ted Lasso, because I thought as a soccer fan yourself, your sensibilities would be offended by the very notion of the whole premise of the thing in the first place.
No, I think every TV series is basically stupid. I mean, I'm planning on doing a regular bit on my show, Tim.
Yeah.
Like looking at movies or TV series and pointing out places where we had to badly suspend disbelief, but we still think it's a good movie. Case in point, I was discussing Varsity Blues on Twitter with Josh Yoey, and we agreed that if Lance blew out his knee, mm-hmm. as gifted as he was and accomplished as he had been to that point, you know, he might not have, you know, got a full ride right then and there, but teams would have backed off until they saw how the knee surgery healed. I said at the very worst, he would have wound up at Pitt. And if he had signed a letter of intent to play for Florida State, as the movie implied, they can't renege on that letter of intent. They have to give him at least a year, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I'm not sure about the exact rules. Where I thought you were going to go with the suspension of disbelief thing was the notion that Billy Bob was going to catch the touchdown on the oop-de-oop.
Well, no, I would get to all that stuff. I mean, the notion that Mox is a good guy when he moved in on Darcy when Lance was laid up in the hospital.
Yeah, he went right over there with the whipped cream bikini.
And then led her on and backed away. Mox was a tease.
You know, like, I look at throwing the ball to Billy Bob on the oop-de-oop, and I think, boy, with the amount of attention the Steelers paid to guard this offseason, they might try that play this year. That might be in the playbook that Kenny Pickett had stolen.
Tim, the only figure in Varsity Blues that was totally sympathetic was Ms. Davis. And might I add, too, remember how they said they were not going to tell anybody about watching her work at the strip club?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they wouldn't have told anybody, but they would have exacted a price from her. I think we know what that price would be.
And if she's trying to keep it a secret, Mark, why is she dancing to Hot for Teacher?
Right, exactly.
She's giving it away.
She should wear a luchador mask.
You got to pay double for that, Cotton. All right, that'll do it.
Got it bad. I'm hot for a lucha.
Mark Madden, check us out for Madden Benz Unfiltered Tuesday morning at 9:30. We'll talk more about the Stanley Cup Finals, if it's known by then, and plenty more. This is the Madden Monday podcast here at Trib Live.